Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 212, entitled, How to Use Your Secret Alter Ego to Transform Your Life, I chat with Todd Herman. Todd Herman is a top performance coach and best-selling author, and in today's episode, Todd talks about using the power of secret identities to transform your life in just about every way. He goes over why alter egos can dramatically help us perform better, the science behind why they work, and the process for creating your own powerful alter egos for any avenue of life. Todd shares how he's created his own alter egos in life and how they've been a complete game changer for him. If you're wondering how to transform your life using the hidden powers that already exist inside you, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you haven't joined our Elite Man newsletter yet, you are missing out. Get on it right now. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign up to get special Elite Man content not seen nor heard anywhere else. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks, and upcoming shows, behind-the-scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates you won't find anywhere else. I'm telling you, if you're not on our newsletter, you are missing out. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and become a true member of the Elite Man community. I look forward to speaking to you soon. elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. Have you tried our newest Elite Life Nutrition supplements yet? Yep, that's right. We've got two new products. Milk Thistle and NAC, N-acetylcysteine, the two best supplements in the world for your liver. Both of these babies are incredibly nourishing for your liver and can help with the natural detoxification of so many toxins from the air, water, and food that you eat. We're constantly bombarded with toxins, and unfortunately, it only seems to be getting worse. This means your liver is working harder and harder without getting the necessary support it needs. And that's why I'm so happy to bring this Milk Thistle and NAC to you guys. I've been taking both of these supplements every day for the last few years, and I absolutely love them. Especially after a night out of drinking one too many. And yeah, there's been a fair share of those over the last few years, but don't tell anybody about that. But anyways, that's why I knew I had to bring these two products onto the Elite Life Nutrition brand. I absolutely love them. They really are incredible with helping to support your liver, also helping out with the natural detoxification of your body, and they help boost your immune system. So do yourself a favor and get one or both of these fantastic supplements today. Go to elitelifenutrition.com/products to visit our full products page, or go to elitelifenutrition.com/NAC or elitelifenutrition.com/milk. And that's NAC for the NAC and MILK as in milk for the milk thistle. And by the way, there is no milk in this milk thistle product. That's just the funky name of the herb they came up with many years back. But anyways, go to elitelifenutrition.com/product to view all our products at any time, including both this NAC and new milk thistle product we have, or just go to elitelifenutrition.com/NAC or elitelifenutrition.com/milk to go right to the page to view either the NAC or the milk. But either way, get one or both of these products. And don't forget that the links to these products and all links for that matter that we mentioned on the podcast can be found right in the show notes. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Todd Herman, the author of the book, The Alter Ego Effect. Todd, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
I appreciate it. A Massachusetts guy letting a New Yorker on his podcast.
And, you know, if I didn't love the book so much, I know.
Yeah, I got it. You'll make the exception just this once.
Yeah, here I am having to deal with snow. But you're a Canadian guy anyways. And
That's right.
You're in New York City. You said if you get even just like an inch or so, people freak out. So you know better than anybody else, man, how it goes.
Mass hysteria. It's like I Am Legend around here when a little bit of snow hits this town.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people there too to make it even worse, you know, crazy people running around. But Todd, I brought you on the show today, man, because I'm fascinated with the topic that you came out with, the book you came out with and the topic surrounding that book. I think it's such an incredible topic. I think it can help so many people when they understand the concept of it. And I want to dive into kind of break down exactly what it is, what it is that you're talking about here and how people can apply this concept into their lives. So just take a minute or so and just talk about what the alter ego effect actually is and how you came up with that idea.
Yeah, sure. So, well, the first thing is I didn't come up with the idea.
Okay.
Alter egos have been around. The first person to mention them was Cicero, the famous Roman statesman and philosopher back in 44 BC. And he used it when he was writing a letter to a friend to talk about just navigating life. And this was a man who is now, in his later years, so had, phenomenal wisdom to pass along. And in fact, Cicero is named as, if not the greatest Roman philosopher and statesman of all time. He's one of the top two or three. And so now he's at the end of his years passing along some wisdom, and he talked about this idea of the alter ego, which the root of the word means the other eye or trusted friend. And so it's the exact opposite of what some people misconstrue it as, which is being, fake or being inauthentic. It's actually not even close to that. It's about actually really finding the most real and authentic version of you possible. And it's a really useful idea when you think of it as the trusted friend, because, someone who's building a business and doing the hard things that you're doing, relationships make everything a lot easier. Good relationships, good contacts, right? So we're always looking for allies in our physical world to help make that happen. But where people overlook having an ally is actually between the 6 inches of their ears. And as someone who has been, again, I've had training companies for the last 22 years, working with pro and Olympic athletes, being the go-to person that people call, whether it's in professional tennis, football, basketball, golf, to help come in and be a bit of a quick hit artist to help turn people around fast. That 6 inches between that ears, that almost undiscovered country, that is where it's very useful to have a trusted friend and an ally to help you navigate and get all of what you can do out on the field. And so what I talk about in the book is not only the science of why alter egos are powerful, what actually it's tapping into as different psychological phenomena that we have going on in our heads, the history of it, all the different people that have used it. And there's a lot of stories of different public figures, athletes, and so on, entertainers that have used it to help get themselves out there. But then also the process, because while I didn't invent the idea of an alter ego, what I did do was I codified the process. I created the process for how you most tap into this and leverage its power from a scientific point of view, but then just from tapping into its great power that it gives us is actually tapping back into the real superpower that human beings have. What's the fastest growing genre of movies and the highest grossing genre of movies right now? Well, it's superhero movies, right?
Yeah.
Right? They're everywhere. And it's because it's tapping into not only is it good storytelling, but it's tapping into just this natural kind of hero's journey arc that we all kind of ascribe to as human beings. But we look at these superheroes and we go, oh, that'd be amazing to have that superpower. Well, there is a superpower that human beings have. We are the only ones on the planet that are gifted with it. And it is the power of our creative imagination. Einstein was adamant in talking about how our imagination is truly the thing that's the most powerful thing that we have, but we ignore it, or we dim it, or we walk away from it. And yet it's the very thing that we use when we were kids. So every single person here, as we kind of unpack this, I want you to know every single person here that's listening has 100% used this idea already, because we used it when we were kids. We always would step into, what was your sport growing up that you played when you were 5, 6, 7, 8? What was your kind of first love?
Probably, football and baseball. But baseball,
football.
Yeah.
Who is your baseball guy? Who is your baseball god back in those days?
Oh, it had to be Nomar Garciaparra.
Oh, there you go. You actually are like a young version of him too. You actually look a little bit like him. That's funny. The poor guy gets traded to the Chicago Cubs right before the Boston Red Sox go and win the 2000 series, right?
That was brutal.
I felt bad for him then. That guy bled the Red Sox. But so I'm sure at some point in time you would step up at the plate as Nomar, right? You're like, I'm going to knock this thing out just like Nomar can, right?
100%, yeah.
That's simply you using the idea. You were going up and you were going to activate the qualities of Nomar. You were stepping away from Justin, the 6-year-old, and you were stepping into the 27-year-old version of Nomar Garciaparra in that moment. But we do this naturally as kids. we play with those ideas. We're bottled up little creative imaginative beings at that point. And then someone says grow up, or someone says start acting your age, or we start to believe this idea that adults are more serious. And so, well, this thing that I was doing when I was 5, 6, 7 years of age, that's childish. And that's what little kids do, but that's not what someone who's older does. And you start acting your age or whatever. And we start walking away. And, you know, school does a fantastic job of beating, you know, creative imagination out of people. And we start walking away from this natural superpower that we have. And so this isn't about being childish. This is about going back to and sort of really untapping this childlikeness that we have. And we can use this idea to be a little more playful with life. We can use it as a method of getting past resistance and the things that are kind of getting in our own way that we may be putting in front of us. Some people have just lived very difficult lives. I mean, 82% of my clients I referred off to therapists because they had personal trauma that happened to them when they were young, and a lot of them were driven by it. It's actually maybe in some ways the thing that helped them maybe fight the man or kind of grit and bear it and do it. But sometimes, though, when it goes untreated, it ends up kind of ruling you in many ways. So there's many reasons why we might be challenged by getting all of ourselves on the field, and using our creative imagination and specifically tapping into the idea of an alter ego is a fantastic way of unlocking what I call in the book this heroic self and getting it out onto the field.
Yeah, you brought up a ton of interesting and great points there. But the first thing that comes to mind is multiple alter egos. Can you have different types of alter egos, personalities or characteristics or someone else kind of that you're embodying? Like say, for instance, you know, the baseball analogy, I'm stepping in and being Nomar when I'm up to plate. And, you know, I go and play basketball. Can I step into Michael Jordan when I'm, you know, playing on the basketball court? Or even like when I go to school and I have to give a speech, can I embody somebody else? Is there multiple alter egos that we have?
Yeah. 100%, because there's already multiple selves that you're taking out there anyway, right? Like for the longest time in the world of psychology, there was this idea that the healthiest human beings were the ones who had this single identity, single self that they took out onto all the different domains of life, what I call in the book the fields of play. Like we have many fields of play that we walk on. You kind of were outlining a bunch of them. There's the sport field, or even you can go specifically, you can talk about the basketball court or the soccer field or the football field. You know, then of course there's the home life and like how I am around my three little kids, and there's work and there's vocation and there's all these different fields. So it's natural for us to do that. Now, for someone who's now just getting involved with this idea now, I tell people, don't go and build out a bunch of different alter egos. Like start playing with this idea now. But it's not building out multiple personalities. We already do this, right? Like who you are right now with me is of course going to be slightly different than who you are with your family or parents or and who you are with your friends is going to be slightly different than who you are when you're around your family. That's not you being fake. That's not you being inauthentic. That's just parts of your personality or parts of your qualities being magnified in different areas. Well, this idea, the power of it is that we're being very intentional about who and what we want to be showing up as so that we can get the best result that we know that we can. It's not about deceiving and tricking other people. It's about really being intentional. And then sometimes there's some people that go, I just can't see they just have a tough time seeing themselves doing it. Well, but they have a very easy time seeing other people do it, which is what this is tapping into as another kind of psychological phenomenon. You know, it's what I call the grass is greener on the other side effect, right? You take a look at me or someone else and you go, well, you know, I can't do it because of what insert whatever reason. But I can see why he got to do that. It's because of X, Y, and Z. And I can understand why that person was successful at it because of whatever. We gloss over because you're not living inside of my head. You're not living inside that other people's person's head. You're not living with that person's narrative and that story. So you're glossing over the reality of what that person had to go through to achieve something. And that's a naturally occurring human condition that we do. Well, all I'm doing is saying, well, let's tap into that. Let's tap into the fact that you look at James Bond and you're like, well, yeah, I'd love to have that. right now you're struggling because of, you know, the million reasons that you say why you can't do it, but James Bond can go do it. Perfect. Let's jump into that. Let's, you know, bring out that inner James Bond when you're going into a presentation and trying to close the deal on getting some sort of funding for your company. Or when you're going in to ask for your raise, why don't you step into that, you know, inner Oprah Winfrey, if it's for whoever's inspired by something, and draw those qualities out in that moment, and leave that, you know, self that's a little bit insecure on the sidelines, and bring out a different side of yourself. And you're just leveraging an alter ego to help make that happen.
Yeah. So when you say step into that self, when you say embody that person, mm-hmm. what does that actually look like? In my mind, in your mind, yeah. in the listeners listening, what does that actually look like for them thinking of like stepping into that new version of themselves, or the one, the alter ego self that they want to embody?
Yeah. Well, again, I want to just remind people as well, try not to overthink this. Because you already, you at your core, you know how to do this, okay? This is, I even say kind of in the book, that this is actually for me, it's a, you know, the next, I didn't talk about this concept publicly for a long time because this was really my secret sauce. This was what I was known for. I knew that the moment that I came up with this book that a lot of other people were going to start using it, and that's fine for me now because I want to lead a movement around this and really bring people back to this idea that helps people navigate life with a lot more grit and perseverance and grace. And I'll actually get to the science of the proof of that too. But how it looks internally is, first, I kind of talked about the first step. First, you want to pick out the context. For what field are you going to go do this on? All right. So if it's for work, great. So you've chosen work. Well, you should choose the field of play for you based on whichever one is most frustrating for you. So it's easy to go for work for some people, but maybe, you know, it's your relationship, or maybe it's your, you know, your kids and parenting or something like that. So that's the first place to start. Second place is, okay, so what's frustrating you right now about the way that you're showing up or the results that you're getting or whatever? And this isn't about beating yourself up. This is just reality. You know, is it that you're not taking the action that you want to be taking? It's that, you know, I let people walk all over me all the time, and I don't like that very much. And I tell a great story in the book of a lady who runs a creative business. She does like graphic design and websites, and has a digital kind of basically a digital agency. And that's a lot of her. She's an extremely kind person. And she would let people walk all over her a little bit. You know, it's the kind of classic idea of scope creep, where people would ask her, oh, could you just do this too? And could you add this on too? And she would say, yeah, 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 yeah. And all of a sudden now she's not very profitable anymore. And she's, you know, not liking her clients. Well, that's not serving her very much. So that's the thing that was frustrating her. I'm like, okay, so now step three to move into that is, well, how do you want to be showing up? And that can be fairly simple for most, because it's typically the flip of what you're frustrated by. Or it's, you know, the whole reason why you chose Nomar. You know, that's where we're getting here, is this is the stage where you're actually looking at who's inspiring you. You know, how would you like to be showing up? And people are inspired by many things. I talk about all the different types of inspiration for alter egos in the book, because they can be like mechanical and robot type alter egos. Animals are a big thing. Take a look at Kobe Bryant and the Black Mamba. I tell the story in the book about how Kobe Bryant came to kind of discovering that particular alter ego for himself. And so, you know, who is it that's out there that you are inspired by how they show up? Because you're like, I'd like to show up like that. Well, okay, so then just to unpack it, what are some of their qualities? Again, we're not really using it. Justin, we're story making beings. We're constantly building narrative and story in our own heads. I'm just helping people direct it towards drawing out of them a more heroic version of themselves instead of a trapped version of themselves, which is the experience of many people, not just people that might be living in what is considered maybe an average life, but high performing people can feel that way too, that there's more that they could be doing out there, but something is holding them back. And a lot of times it's this mental game side of it that's holding them back. So, you know, who is it that inspires you? I'll give you me as an example too. When I first started out in business, I was, you know, 21 when I started my business. I looked like I was 12. I was terribly insecure about the fact that I looked like I had a baby face, and I looked young. And who's going to listen to me? Who's going to believe me when I go up on stage and talk about the mental game? Because, you know, I'm not 40 years old and I don't have, you know, 5 degrees underneath my belt. And, you know, I haven't worked with, you know, 96 Olympians yet. And, you know, I was making up this whole just stack of resistances to, like, which was stopping me from even getting out there. I mean, what a terrible story I was telling myself. And that's what we do. Like, I end up just sort of tossing a little bit of a pebble down the hill, and a big avalanche of negativity and self-doubt and, you know, judgment starts to creep in, not even creep in, just rumble through me. But then I kind of went back and I was like, wait a second, when I played football, cause I had college football scholarships, and I was a nationally ranked badminton player as well, which aren't typically two sports that go together, but yeah, those were just a couple of the sports that I excelled at. And you know, when I went on the football field, I was not this physical specimen. I wasn't 6'4", 248 pounds of solid muscle. I was 6 feet and about 156 pounds soaking wet when I was in high school. I mean, I couldn't put on weight if my life depended on it. But I was such a competitor, I didn't want that to be stopping me. And I didn't really even think that much about my weight, because I just fundamentally liked playing bigger than myself. But I went out on that field as Geronimo. That was my alter ego. I'm a huge Native American buff, and where I grew up on our farm and ranch in Western Canada, we have a rich history of Native American history in the area. And it was a composite, actually, alter ego. It was Geronimo, which was actually a group of Native American five warriors, plus Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott. So that was who I was taking out onto that field. And when I was going onto the field, I wasn't going out as Todd, I was going out as Geronimo. And what I did in my mind, just to kind of give you kind of some insight, so with all of my clients, we build out what are called mental movie theaters that you step into to just allow yourself to see how you're going to perform. Because psychologically, anytime you can create something of familiarity in your mind, the chances of you executing that thing at your peak state goes way up. So in my mind, I had this mental movie theater where when I went, I'd walk into it through one door. And then after a few seconds of being inside, Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott, two Hall of Fame football players, Chicago Bears, San Francisco 49ers, would walk in through the left door in the back. And on the right-hand side, through a door, the five Native Americans would walk in, the warriors would walk in, and they would all approach me. And Walter Payton would walk up to me, and he would hand me five cards. And they were trading cards. Three of them were Walter Payton, and two of them were Ronnie Lott. And he handed me these five cards. This is all happening in my mind. And he would say, here you go. Take a piece of each of us with you out onto the field. But don't for one second dishonor our character in our memory by not showing up like we would. And then he'd hand me the cards, because I wanted to create that massive emotional resonance. Cause when I was going out and I was tackling people, there wasn't one guy that was tackling them. There was seven people tackling that person, five warriors and Walter Payton and Ronnie Lott. Like, there was not a chance someone was going to be able to stop me when I was handed the ball, kind of thing, because they weren't tackling Todd. They were tackling seven people. And so then I would take those, and then I actually had five cards in my hand, and I took three, the Walter Payton cards. I put one in my helmet because I wanted to think like Walter out there. And I put two of his in my thigh pads because I wanted to run like him. Then I took Ronnie Lott's cards and I shoved them underneath my shoulder pads because I wanted to hit like Ronnie Lott out there. And then when I put on that helmet, that's when I activated in my heart also that Native American tribe. And that's when Geronimo was activated. And so I left that 156-pound kid on the sidelines and I went out as that person. And it allowed me to massively suspend the disbelief about what I thought I could and couldn't do, because I wasn't going out there as myself. I was going out there as this, you know, powerful being kind of thing. Well, sort of to carry this forward now I'm in business and I'm like, Geronimo, that would be amazing. And I'm like, wait a second, Geronimo doesn't really work all that well in business because he's aggressive. He's sort of hunting down and destroying things in his path. That's not really all that helpful. And really what I was struggling with was that I was insecure. I was indecisive. I lacked confidence and that's not going to help me build my business. But then I was like, you know what? I want to be like this Superman version of myself in business. And right when I thought that thought, immediately I was like, wait a second. Superman puts on glasses to become Clark Kent, the mild-mannered version of himself that goes out into society to be accepted by everyone. Why don't I go out and get a pair of glasses that allows me to step into my Superman version of myself, and it's my reverse Superman. And my first name's actually Richard. And so that's what I did. When I did that, I was stepping into Super Richard in my head to move past. So Todd went to the sidelines again, that insecure version of my identity. And I went out there as Super Richard. So what I did was I went to where I was living at the time, which was Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I went to West Edmonton Mall and I bought a pair of non-prescription glasses at Lens Crafters. And this was long before glasses were cool as a fashion statement. This was 20 years ago almost. That's what I did. I went home and I put on those glasses and I did the same thing. I was very intentional about who and what was showing up, you know, and as someone who operated in the mental game world, I know the importance of managing that state that we're in and just really bringing that resonant emotion that is important to help me accomplish things. And anytime I caught myself feeling insecure, not making the phone call, I'd take those glasses off immediately because that's not Super Richard would never think that way. Those thoughts wouldn't even enter his mind. And then in even just that act of taking them off, it would trigger me right back into it because, you know, I had a lot of conviction. I know what I wanted to go and, you know, achieve and accomplish. And I didn't want to let those irrational thoughts get in my way by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't know if that helps answer that question, but that kind of gives you some insight into, and I'm not the only one who did it that way. I mean, I tell the story, the very first story I tell in the book is of one of the greatest athletes to ever live on the planet was Bo Jackson. You know, the only athlete to win an All-Star in two of the major American sports, baseball and football. And I met him at an event in Georgia where I was speaking at. I was backstage getting ready to go on, and into the green room walked Bo Jackson. And I thought, geez, there's that guy that I used to play on Nintendo as a kid. And he walked over to me right away and he's like, hi, I'm Bo Jackson. And I said, yeah, I know who you are. You won me a lot of games on Tecmo Bowl as a kid. because if you don't know, he was the actual cheat code for that Tecmo Bowl football game, because you could hand it off to Bo Jackson and it was impossible to tackle him. And so he laughed and he's like, oh, you're not the first one to say that. And he said, you're talking today? And I said, yeah. He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm going to talk to them about, you know, the mental game. But specifically, I'm going to talk to them about how they can use an alter ego or a secret identity to really untap their performance and get all of their capability out there and not show up as a lesser self. And he kind of got this like weird look on his face, cocked his head to the side. And he said, Bo Jackson never played a down of football his entire life. And I was like, interesting. Tell me more. And he was like, yeah, he's like, if people know my backstory, I was a bit of an angry kid, got into a bit of trouble. But on the football field, it kind of made me a little bit uncoachable. I took some, you know, poor penalties. One night I was watching a movie and I saw this character come on the screen that was cold, unemotional, methodical, calculating. And it just hit me. I was like, wait a second. He's doing all this and he's not angry. What if I just went on the field as that? And it was Jason from Friday the 13th, which sounds crazy to people because they're like, here's an angry kid and he chooses a serial killer to be his alter ego. But that's the power of this, is it's his takeaway. He wasn't taking away the fact that he was killing people. That wasn't it. He was taking away just the emotional quality of that person, that he was cold, emotional, calculating, which would serve him on the, like, I mean, that's going to serve you on the football field. That's not going to serve you and me, right? Like, that's not, if you were cold, unemotional, calculating, methodical, that's going to leave for a very, very thin a podcast interviewer. It might be interesting as well, but context matters. So out there on the football field, that actually really helped him. He stopped being angry. He was just methodical, unemotional. And he said, you know, my only mission on that field was to just destroy anything that got in my path with no emotion whatsoever. And I'd already been talking to people at alter egos. But that even just kind of solidified in me just the power of it, because I'd already been working with so many people on it, and it had been such a common theme amongst people that were performing at a high level, that consistently performed at a high level. And here was one of the greatest athletes ever just talking about the same thing. And to him, it was just amazing, because he was like, I can't believe someone gets paid to build these out for people. I thought I had just, you know, that I was kind of one of the only ones. And I'm like, no, you're one of literally thousands of people that use this. And you're just a great case study on its effectiveness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bo Jackson, obviously, is one of the greatest athletes that ever lived. And I actually did a report on him, school report, back probably in like eighth grade or something. So, mm-hmm. You know, I learned a ton about him and just the athletic ability he had and the dominance. Yeah. If it wasn't for that injury,
yeah,
as an Oakland Raider, I mean, we'd probably be talking about him in the same light as Michael Jordan or some of the other greats like that. But, you know, as it turns out, a lot of people, like millennials especially, don't even know who he is. And it's a shame. But, I mean, true, just incredible athlete. And that is fascinating that he chooses or he chose Jason, the serial killer, you know, from the horror movies. I mean, like cold, calculating, unemotional. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense when you think about it. But at first glance, it sounds kind of ridiculous. But very fascinating to see that high performers like him and other athletes that you work with, like top athletes like that, and even Kobe Bryant, you mentioned Kobe Bryant, you think these are the types of people that other people are emulating. Like I would be emulating like Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan or Bo Jackson on the football field.
Yeah.
But it's like these guys are doing the same thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I had a good friend who's read the book. What I really appreciate about him is he's of course a good friend, and he's going to, what's great about him is he gives me really good, honest feedback, and I do the same thing for him. But, you know, what he said to me was, you know, for decades and decades, people have been trying to say what you've said in this book, but there hasn't been a language to describe it. And what you're giving people is a language of how elite people have achieved great things. And instead of someone going and saying, hey, I'm going to go be like Kobe, what I'm saying is no, use the real mental tools that he used in order to become Kobe. Don't be Kobe, be you, but just use these tools like he's used. Again, I talk about in the book, Winston Churchill used it as well. On the book cover, like when people see it, they're going to see a pair of glasses that's on there. And now that people have heard my story and, of course, Superman and Clark Kent, they go, oh, that's where the glasses are on there. That's actually not the reason for the glasses on the book. It's a totem. And we haven't gotten to this yet. But what's important about this process is that we use a totem, an artifact or a talisman, something physical to help activate it. Just like Clark Kent would put on the glasses to act that certain way or be and step into that person, I mean, just like I used the glasses. And again, I only use the glasses just because I like wearing them for dress. Or just in business. And I don't need those anymore to step into Super Richard. I became that person. In fact, one day I was sitting down at my desk working away, and I just had a really successful call to do a big training program for a major government. And I was like, wait a second, where are my glasses? I didn't have them on. And I'd gotten so used to it that in the moment I just had this like amazing wash of like kind of positive emotion where I was like, man, I finally became that person that I wanted to be. And in fact, Cary Grant, the golden era actor of the 1950s and 60s, famous, you know, actor of that time, was known for being very charismatic and debonair. He had this great quote at the end, near the end of his life, where he said, I pretended to be somebody I wanted to be, and I finally became that person, or he became me, or we met at some point. And it's such a great encapsulation of what this idea represents that we all use, except I would just change one word. It wouldn't be I pretended. It would be I activated somebody I wanted to be. And I finally became that person, or he became me, or we met at some point. Because when you think of how anyone who's trying to achieve and strive and, you know, grow as a person, there's this current self that we have, which has its own comfort zone sort of around it. But we have this vision of, you know, how we would like to be acting possibly, you know, the changes we'd like to make or the life we'd like to be living, whatever that might be on in the context or the, you know, the results we want to be getting on a certain field of play for ourselves. But there's a gap between the two. And what I'm telling people is you can try to use what has been used or what has been told to people for decades and decades in self-help and personal development books, that is just fundamentally wrong. It's actually how I know many people that write books aren't actual practitioners. So, like, you know, I've worked with people one-on-one. I've got over 16,000 hours working with people one-on-one, toes to toes, nose to nose, eyeball to eyeball. And when you're working with people one-on-one, like, your strategies are under the white hot light of results. Because if I tell you to go do something and then you go do it and you don't get a result with it, there might be something that you didn't use to execute it properly. But if you're constantly giving out strategies that aren't working, which are what are typically found in many, 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 many self-help books, you're not going to, I won't be able to work with a pro athlete. I can't work with an Olympian. I can't work with, you know, elite business people here in New York City, because results matter. And so this gap between where you are and where you want to go, the bridge to help get there more with more grit, more grace, and more perseverance, and with just a healthier state of mind, is using your creative imagination. And an alter ego is one of the great tools to use to help make that happen. And I talk about grit and perseverance just for some science here, because my entire business is based off of repeatable stuff. So science plays a big part in our work. And there was a great study that was done at the University of Minnesota with young children, where they brought a bunch of them into a room and they gave them a puzzle to try and solve, except it was an unsolvable puzzle. There was no solution to it. So they wanted to see how long they would stick it out with the puzzle before they'd quit on it. And they were measuring their grit, their level of grit and perseverance. But one thing that kind of came out of it that was surprising to them was they also started to kind of measure and track what their self-talk was like as they were doing it. And they would say things like, oh, I give up, I can't do this. And they would quit. Okay, so they track all the data and then they bring in a rack of superhero costumes. They were actually specifically Batman and Dora the Explorer costumes. And they got the kids to put on the costumes. Pick your favorite one, put on a costume. So the kids put on the costumes and then they brought in another puzzle for them to do. This time, again, unsolvable. And they wanted to see how long they would stick it out now. Well, their level of grit and perseverance went way up, which means that they stuck with doing the puzzle a lot longer. But the flip was that they were also able to see what their self-talk looked like, because they started vocalizing things like, well, Batman wouldn't quit, so I'm not going to quit. Or Dora the Explorer would find a way, so I'm going to find a way. And so that's building up a fantastic new world in their mind of what they can and can't do. So that's a psychological phenomenon that exists. And that's why we use totems and artifacts. What they were using was something called enclosed cognition. We as human beings, we add story and meaning to the things that we see other people wearing or that we wear. We start to, when we put something on, like you might have a leather jacket that you put on where you're like, oh, I just feel like a badass when I'm wearing this. Or I put on those glasses and I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm just a lot smarter, more articulate, just more confident, right? And so then you start acting that way. Well, that's a natural occurring phenomenon. And when you do it with the intention of drawing those best qualities out of you, it's a way healthier way of you navigating that field. If you're doing it, if I'm putting on glasses because I want to trick you or I want to make you think that I'm smart, well, that's actually a very poor way of trying to use these strategies, because you're doing what I call trapping yourself. Anytime you start doing things for other people and other reasons beyond what, you know, you trying to create for yourself, you're living your life outside of your own head. You're living your life very outcome-based. And people like that are typically very stressed and they're anxious because those are all uncontrollables. If I'm putting on something so I can look smart to you, I have no control over whether or not you're going to perceive me as being smart. And I'm going to start trying to do things to help make you think that I'm smart. Not a great strategy. And so enclosed cognition is just another way that we're is just another thing that we're tapping into when we use a totem, a talisman, an artifact. That could be, LeBron James used this when he would come out onto the court. And what was the last thing he did before he started the game? Do you remember when he was in Cleveland when he first started out?
Was it like slapping the powder in the air?
That thing? Exactly. Yeah. He threw the chalk up in the air. Yeah. That was him activating that self, that heroic self for him to go out onto the court. That was his final move to go and do that. And so we use these things. So the fourth kind of step in the whole process is to find that totem, that artifact. I've got a lady who's a world-class dressage, so equestrian. Her alter ego is Wonder Woman. And she was using Wonder Woman because she was overly stressed and anxious when she was on the back of the horse. And if you know anything about horses, you know that they are fantastic magnifiers of emotion. So if you're stressed, you know what he's going to be? Stressed. Or the female horse would be? Stressed. But Wonder Woman was, for her, just this supremely confident, calm, centered person that she wanted to be. And so she went out and she created a Wonder Woman bracelet, a clasp that when she put on her wrist and when that thing snapped shut, that's when Wonder Woman would take over inside of her. And again, it's not that you're taking over as Wonder Woman. It's that you're just stepping into the qualities of that kind of inspiration for you.
Yeah. No, that is incredible. And it's so interesting. I love the science behind it too, that, you know, there's actual proven studies out there that demonstrate the same types of things that we're talking about here and that it actually really works. It sounds a lot to the totem and the artifact thing. It also sounds, I don't know if you're familiar with NLP at all, but it sounds like NLP and it sounds like anchoring and using those objects as triggers for the emotions that you want to feel. So if you're actually feeling like you want to have a specific feeling, say it's like confidence and you have this incredible state, like you're feeling great about yourself and then you could do like an anchor, like your finger and your thumb, index finger and your thumb pressing that together, create an actual like action. And that action is the trigger to have that memory of emotional excellence, of confidence be triggered throughout your body. And it's also the same thing with like Pavlov's dogs, which I'm sure you heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same type of thing there. When they heard the bell, the dogs would get, salivate and get hungry and all the other stuff. So I wonder if it's the same type of thing that's going on like physiologically in the body. When you have an artifact, when you have a totem, the body like kind of just takes that memory of feeling great or having that idea of feeling great and then just kind of translates it to the emotional state you have.
Yeah. So, I mean, people have brought up NLP to me in the past. I'm not that, I mean, I've become more familiar with it because people were bringing it up to me recently, last few years. But so yes and no. The one thing that's weak about that idea of like, squeezing your thumb and things like that is people are ignoring one of the most powerful forms of creating new change, habits, routines, whatever, and that is your environment, physical things. And so this idea of enclosed cognition is different than trying to create that trigger. We're sort of, when you're using clothing in particular or items that you can put on, you're leveraging an existing phenomenon inside of the mind more quickly than by sitting and practicing trying to get into the state that NLP does. Like there's, for me, with some of the strategies that NLP talks about, there's a little bit too much conscious thinking. I want to just leverage already existing unconscious, powers that human beings have. Mm-hmm. Another study that was done at the Kellogg School of Management, they brought a bunch of students into a room and they had them look at this word puzzle that had the words of a bunch of different colors on this grid, but the word of the color and what it was colored in was different. So they'd have the word green, but it would be yellow. and they'd have the word red, but it'd be colored in blue. And so what you need to do when you're going through this grid is you need to actually say the word. The problem is the brain processes color before it processes the word. So it's like a real mind trick to go through it. You got to really think your way through it and say the word. So what they were doing was that they would track their mistakes, their focus, their concentration, how quickly they could do it in. So they put each student through it, and then they would leave the room. Then they brought in a new group of students, and this time each of these students, they were given a white coat to put on. And they were told that the white coat was a painter's coat. So they put on the painter's smock, and then they did the whole test. Track the results, their mistakes, how quickly they did it. They leave. They bring in a new group of students. This time, they hand them the same white coat, except this time, they tell them that it's a lab coat or a doctor's coat. They put it on, and they do the test. Track the results. Now, the people who had the lab coat on made less than half the mistakes as the other two groups, and they did it twice as fast. The people who had the painter's coat on didn't get any different results from the people who had just their plain clothes on. Okay, so why is this? Well, the people who had on the painter's coat, when they put on the painter's coat, they're enclothing themselves in the cognitive state or identity of a painter. Well, being a painter, we automatically think of being more creative, more imaginative, more expressive. That doesn't help you with a task where you're tracking being careful, methodical, detailed, right? Whereas the people with the lab coat on, doctor's coat, they enclothe themselves in the identity of a lab person or a doctor. Those people, we assume ourselves, again, we tell ourselves stories, is someone that is careful, methodical, detailed. Well, all qualities that would help you do that test. It's such a great example of the power of this effect that I talk about inside the Alter Ego book of enclothing ourselves in a new idea. So yeah, there's elements of maybe the NLP world that are good, but I like staying in the lane of there's already existing things. We don't need to reinvent a new language for ourselves. We've already got it going on.
I love the idea too. I love the idea of putting something on like the lab coat or whatever it is. Like, you know, yeah. In your case, the glasses, also the cards, you know, putting the cards on your jersey around mm-hmm. your pads and everything.
Yeah.
Is that a necessity though? Do you need that part?
No.
Like, cause you said, I think in the beginning you said everybody does this already inherently. It's an innate quality that we all have and we do it, you know, all the time, whether we realize it or not. Some people, the peak performers, the top achievers, they do it in a specific way and sometimes better than other people. But so if you don't need an article, an artifact, a totem, how else do you use it?
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to, when we're creating the process, I'm trying to make this as simple and easy for you to do as possible, right? And so by having something physical in your environment, so whether you put something on, so I talk about in the book, there's three qualities of a great way of activating this. One is you could wear something. That's like the best way. It's the easiest way because of just you're tapping into enclosed cognition. The second one is to just have it on you. So I've got a client, he's not wearing something, but he's an Iowa farm boy. He's a very successful wealth guy here in New York City. And he got a pebble from his family's farm in Iowa, and he carries it with him in his pocket. And for him, it's about activating the values and the character traits of his family name. Like that's kind of, he's sort of using this composite of his family history as his alter ego, in fact. So that's one way. So you could have it on you. And then the third one is it's something that's in your environment or it's the stage itself that activates. So Bo Jackson would talk about how Jason lived on the field. And when he went on into the field, he would, when he stepped on with his left or his right foot, that's when Jason would enter him. Like blue shock, blue lightning, you know, that's when Jason enters. You know, I've got, you know, performers here in New York that, you know, are on Broadway or in film or whatever. And that's so that character or that whatever lives on that stage when they go out there, that you know, that calm centeredness that they might need to get over stage fright or something like that. So that's it. you know, those are just some great. I've got a client who uses a frame of his grandmother on his desk. And when he really wants to activate her qualities, because he wasn't a natural leader, he was a very kind of abrasive individual. But he was, he had moved and built a massive wealth or massive investment company up. And he was in a leadership role, and he needed to start activating those other leadership qualities. And anytime he needed to have more difficult conversations that he would typically, you know, wouldn't be well suited for, you know, with maybe coming unglued on people, he would sort of activate her qualities. So to your point, no, you don't need to wear something. It's just, if I'm trying to get people to make change happen, that's one of the fastest ways. If you can find something, that's great.
Yeah, seems one of like the easiest way to just do it, you know, pick something up or put something on and boom, yeah. You become, you know, Superman, yeah. As opposed to Clark Kent, or in your case, doing the opposite, reversing, yeah. when you throw the fake glasses on, which, you know, look good on you, by the way.
Thank but, you, good sir.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. And I'm looking forward to diving through this book, man. It's just such a fascinating topic. It's totally... And I mean, I believe in that. I've used this myself for many years, you know, on and off, professionally, socially, yeah. Personally, whatever, like different challenges that have come my way. I've used this exact same thing, and I'm just so so looking forward to, so excited to see exactly how you how you put this to pen to paper and kind of made it all a lot clearer for everybody and what's going on and how to use it. So wrapping things up, Todd, what's a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and also a place that our listeners can check out that book?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, just one final thought is, you know, we all need, it makes sense for all of us to go and get allies to help us, you know, navigate life. We talk about the power of allies when it comes to, you know, relationships and helping us, you know, do the tough things. And, you know, like I said at the very beginning, having an internal ally, that trusted friend to help us, you know, navigate things, whether it's doing it more gracefully, with more grit, more perseverance, maybe even just having a little more fun and being more playful. I mean, that was one of the big reasons why I was doing it. I was, you know, challenged with some, you know, pretty terrible things that happened to me at a young age. And, you know, it was a way of me maybe getting away from and escaping away from that kind of reality that I was having to live inside of. But so there's many reasons why we can tap into it. And it's the most natural thing for you to be doing. And so I'm really excited, honestly, about the next many, many years of, you know, getting the idea back out into people's hands. Because like I said, it's not a new idea. It's an existing idea. It's an old idea. And, you know, but bringing in, creating that ally to help you do, you know, the fun and challenging things that you want to go do. And if I can help and inspire people to, and give people the tools really to go out and do more amazing things, then, you know, selfishly, I benefit, because it typically makes the world a better place. So if they want to find out more about the book, there's a bunch of videos that we've got for people as well at altereegoeffect.com. You know, my home base on the internet is toddherman.me, toddherman.me, toddherman.me. And you can find all my kind of social channels, and I'm active, you know, everywhere. So would love to hear from people. If they got questions, tag me. Buy the book, let me know. Would love to hear from people.
Guys, make sure you check out his new book, The Alter Ego Effect. Todd, thanks for coming on, man. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.